Car, Elixon, wherefore, having changed, teen, oxen, wherefore, or therefore, but more like wherefore, you have it in front of you there, but the people out on radio and television do not. Kai Elixon, wherefore, having changed, the glory of the, an interesting word here, star two, having changed the glory of the incorruptible or non-corruptible, say you, God, into homoiomati, into likeness Iconos is the word that's the key here, S. Iconos. Corruptible. Thartu. Thartu. Notice this word is the same as Alphathartu. Accent moves a far two, but what's left off is the A. Now you have been Greek scholars enough to know. Pistis, the Greek word for faith. You've learned that if you want to put it in reverse or negate it, you put ah, or A in front of it. Remember that?
Yes, sir.
Apistis is going every direction except trusting God. Puts it in reverse. There's no neutral gear. Here, now there's some things you ought to put an A in front of. Not faith. Faith, you don't want an A in front of it. Apistis takes you away from God. In this case, the A has a positive meaning. Because this word, thathartu, is dying, death, corruption, decay, these are interesting letters in the Greek. We have PH, TH, awkward in front of each other, thathar, two. That means corruptible, dying, decaying, going to naught. You put an A in front of it, it is not dying, not corrupting, not decaying, not for naught. What this verse is saying, wherefore having changed the glory, which is the outraying of God's nature, the glory of that which expresses God Himself, which includes His creation, having changed the glory of the non-corruptible, undying God who made it all, instead of seeing through the creation, I surely don't have to do a lot of review today because that's why those verses are up there in the inset on the Greek passages you have in front of you that I handed out. I have put the King James from the 19th verse on, where for weeks we've camped out, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God showed it unto them. For the invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood with the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead. Did you turn me down because I leaned down? Hold your hand up and tell me yes or no. Don't touch that knob there unless I tell you to touch your knobs, okay? Because when they knew God, they glorified Him not as God, neither were thankful, but became, and we've been over this word, Matthias, translated vain, evilly self-deceptive. In their dialogues, is the word in the Greek, their reasoning and their use of words to justify their evil self-deception, and their God reacted. Their senseless heart, literally, was darkened. We've been for weeks on this, that God takes sense away. He has reached the stage of being fed up. He left enough imprint of His reality and His presence that failure to recognize Him, give Him glory, and be thankful for what God has provided for this training ground of life is to have Him release His wrath on you now, not just future, now. And the release of that wrath is to take away a God-seeing quality, a capacity to see God. You become literally a darkened mind called senseless heart, and having reached that state as an object of God's wrath now. Let me simplify it. Paul is writing in the first century. All the scientific work of these 2,000 years was yet to be unveiled. But even then, failure to see the hand of God in the creation that's made produces wrath. Now, the context started with the revelation of the gospel, God's righteousness being unveiled as a gift from God in return for faith. And with the resurrection of His Son, the unfolding of the redemptive plan culminated. And when He came out of that grave, the kingdom of God in power was made available. And that's the gospel message that Paul is coming to Rome to bring. But at the same time, something that apparently God tolerated, and give me just a hair more, God tolerated until this pattern of revelation unfolded in the death and resurrection of Christ and the full unveiling of God's love and the measure of His grace to save us as we are and do in us what we cannot do and give it to us in return for trust on our behalf, for our part. He also, at that same time, unleashed a wrath. A wrath that hits all mankind who are given a capacity to see God, and if they do not, if they trifle with whatever the light you have from a heathen who just wakes up and sees the sun, to those, such as you, that have had the special revelation of His Word, to trifle, to be cavalier, to fail to live with an awareness of God's presence, to fail to recognize His eternal power and control, the opposite of what I preached last Sunday, the failure to recognize that God's going to be the boss, and that even though He paid the price and the pieces of silver that were paid to Judas, who threw them down and then they were picked up and economically thrown, in the sense that they were purchasing, the priest took them and purchased the field of the broken pots, to tell us in that last reference to the potter's house that God at Calvary paid the price to buy up the field. And in another parable He says He pays the price to buy the whole field, which is the world, to get the treasure out of it. We all have that chance, but He's going to be the potter, which is the boss. And as I've said probably 10, 15 times in this section of this series, as R.C. Sproul has said, atheism is a psychological state. Mankind does not want to recognize a master. They don't want to bow. They don't want to yield to the potter. And God is saying, I've gone forth and going. Failure to recognize my tracks, failure to act on the knowledge you have, will result in me withdrawing from you a capacity that gave you the ability to see me. You had it, now I'm taking it from you. Your foolish heart darkened, you become a professing wise man who in reality is a moron. And then the verse that's in front of you. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and or therefore or wherefore, and having changed the glory of an undying, uncorruptible, talk about cheap imitations. How many have ever seen these fake Rolexes? You ever seen them? Now, you can't tell the difference at a distance, can you? You look at that Rolex. I mean, a player over here on one of these sidewalk tables, got his shirt pulled up with a Rolex on his wrist. This is not a Rolex, by the way. The Rolex is for the Novo Rich. The Beverly Hills player type that show up at 4 a.m. at that Last Chance Cafe with their fake Rolex. But all you got to do is pick up a real one and pick up the fake, and you know the difference. That's what's happening here. Was since gone. This is but an illustration of the previous verse. What happens to intelligent people when their sense is gone? They change the glory of an incorruptible, undying, eternal God into an image or a representation. Well, the translation has it here, a likeness. A likeness of an icon. Now, the King James doesn't quite say it that way, because the King James says, change the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like. Into a likeness image. A likeness icon. Of corruptible, dying, instead of the glory of God being bowed before in awe, awareness of His presence practiced an eternal living God who loved us enough in the case of those who have this knowledge of special revelation, to give His Son for us. Instead of a God who created this great universe that defies our mind's ability to master it, we change the glory that God wants us to see and bow before and thank Him for into a corrupt icon, a dying, mediocre, corrupt, decaying, unlasting, degenerated by comparison, likeness of an icon, anthropu, likeness of a man, etc., birds, quadrupeds, four-footed creatures, and reptiles. And immediately I lose the audience. Because immediately now you can tune out the rest of the day, because this does not apply to today or to you. Because you can walk all over Los Angeles and you won't find many people on the sidewalk. Some places you will, but not many. Carving out a wood image of a snake or a wood image of a bull or a wood image of a bird or some man. So now I understand up till now I had to work a little because you're writing that Greek on the board, but now you're into an area that I can plan my afternoon while you finish this message, because there's nothing in this for me. I'm not about to bow down to icons. Made in the likeness of man. No. Is that right? Is that true? Let's see now. Well, you've seen this book before, haven't you? Icons of Evolution. Can you get in close enough to see these walking icons? Icons of Evolution. Oh, modern man wouldn't reduce, well, in the first place, there is no God. But in its place, we don't have icons that are corruptible. Is that so? Isn't that interesting? Bones of contention. People stare. This is Bones of Contention by Marvin L. Lubinow. I think you can get it in the bookstore. I'm not sure, but I think so. I think it's back there. People stare. Am I boring you? As they approach the table, lined with human skulls, they stare. The mood is one of silence and incredible wonder. When someone finally dares to break the silence, I know instinctively what the question will be. I've heard it hundreds of times. Are they real? When I inform the questioner that the skulls are plaster casts of the original fossils, his mood changes to relief that he's not in the present death. However, even my assurance that they are accurate and expensive casts of the original fossil material doesn't restore the mystique that was obvious before the question was asked. The very thought that a professor at a Christian liberal arts college would possess 30 original human fossils, original in italics, reveals the magnitude of the misconception that exists in the mind of the public regarding these fossils. They actually believe this Christian professor had 30 original skulls of human fossils. It represents the first myth about human evolution, and I want to discuss it. Although I've visited most of the major natural history museums in the United States and some overseas, I have never seen an original human fossil. Neither have most of the anthropologists who teach human evolution in our universities. Neither have you. Now, your married companion is an exception, but other than that, how many of you have seen a human fossil? I may not be boring you, but that made a couple of you mad. The shoe fits, wear it. I'm older than most of you. I ain't going to be a fossil. You can call me a fossil, an old fossil. You get prepared to go see the same dentist that MVP player on Philadelphia had to go see. Although I visited most of the major natural history museums in the United States and some overseas, I've never seen an original human fossil, neither have you. In fact, you may not have seen even a picture of an original fossil. What you thought were pictures of original fossils may have been pictures of casts. No prisoner on death row is under greater security than those ancient relics called human fossils. Most of the original fossils are sequestered inside vaults of concrete or stone, accessible only through massive steel doors, the type you would expect to see at First National Bank, the Ark of the Covenant. Was not kept in as tight a place as this. The former director of the National Museum of Kenya in Nairobi was Richard Leakey. Many of the fossils housed there were found by him and his team of national workers. They're kept in the hominoid room, which has reinforced concrete walls and is designed to withstand conventional bomb blasts. Leakey and one other trusted museum staff member were the only ones who had keys to the room. Now, of course, at times, some on my staff would have taken one out for a paperweight. That old thing. Yeah. Why doesn't he get rid of those things? Designed to withstand conventional bomb blasts. Inside the room are locked boxes with hinged lids containing the fossils that rest on form-fitted blocks of foam rubber. Likeness icons. Most of the South African fossils reside in the Transvaal Museum in Pretoria. They're kept in a strong room known as the Red Cave, because of the 3-foot-thick walls that are painted red. This vault was originally designed to house valuable documents. The fossils rest on red velvet placed over foam rubber lining. Germany has built a 2-story museum to celebrate the fossil skull known as Steinheim Man, discovered in 1933. Visitors, however, see only plastic replicas. The fossil itself is kept in a small safe several miles away. This safe is set into the thick stone wall of a 250-year-old military arsenal outside Stuttgart. The fossil's former home was a bank vault. The story is told that when scientists came to study the fossil, they were blindfolded, driven to the bank, and unmasked only when safely inside so they would not even know the location of the bank. Why this incredible security? Whether we are creationists or evolutionists, these fossils, certainly the human ones, we're told, are the remains of our ancestors. They're priceless treasures of human history. Their discovery has been the result of hard work, great expense, and often incredible luck. They're irreplaceable. How would one replace a fossil that's been lost or damaged beyond repair? Where would one go to find another just like it? In 1984, the American Museum of Natural History in New York sponsored its famous Ancestors exhibit, in which more than 40 of these original fossils were brought together for the first time ever for the public to view and for scholars to study. Obviously, security had top priority. Each fossil was accompanied by the curator of its home museum. Special agents met them at Kennedy International Airport, whisked them through a special section of customs without even opening the containers housing the fossils. Black Cadillac limousines with police escorts rushed them to the American Museum. And when the fossils were put on public display, they were placed behind 1-inch laminated acrylic panels and batter-proof, bulletproof, electronically monitored exhibit cases. Even work on the subway line under the museum was halted until after the exhibition to protect the fossils from vibration. Icons galore. Your kids are made to respect them. I lost my faith in college, I told you, mainly because of an attitude that you just couldn't graduate with intellectual and academic wings believing in the supernatural. But a periphery matter which probably in the 26 years that I have been pastor here is the only thing that as I look back on the years of my teaching that I would erase, not serious enough that I'm going to erase it, but that I would erase if I had done as much study in this area 26 years ago as I have in recent years. I did an undergraduate major in history, minor in the physical sciences, and a unit major in geology in preparation for a doctorate at Cal in the fields of geography and geology, which subsequently God directed me differently, and I went to Stanford and started over in philosophy and philosophy of education. But the first attack on my faith was in geology and paleontology. A collector by nature, I probably assembled the most complete, I got a little ring now, the most complete mineral collection in my mineralogy class than any student ever assembled. That was the collector in me that stayed through the years. I bought the geologic column. And I have oft said, there's no question, but what paleontology reveals, these layers and layers of geologic strata, with what appear to be progressive zones of organisms. And I'm on record as saying, to take that into account, there's no reason to doubt the Bible or Genesis or God on that basis, because if God wanted to create the earth that way, in fact, that's the way I'd have done it, if I were God. I would have created it full of all these problems and questions. I mean, look at the way computer games hook your kids. I mean, God, if I were God, I would make this earth full of mystery so that you could pursue the knowledge of God. And so I've said, number one, the gap theory in Genesis 1:1 and 1:2, and the fact that Satan was in Eden before he appears as the fallen one after Genesis 1:2, tells me there was an earth. And there was an ancient earth, that was destroyed in the cataclysm seen by Jeremiah, and I haven't reversed that position at all, and that whatever cataclysm struck the earth in the war in the heavens when Jesus saw Satan cast down, which Jeremiah saw in the past tense, when mountains moved, that cataclysm resulted in an earth covered with water, and the Spirit of God hovered over the face of the deep. And I have said, if God wanted to create by the evolutionary method, so what? It has nothing to do with your faith in God. There's nothing about Christianity, I would say, that kept God from creating that way if he wanted to do it. Intelligent design, following through the centuries, producing that way. And I said, there's no choice that has to be made between evolution and Christianity. I won't say that today. I will not say that today. I would still say, if evolution were true, God could create that way. I would still say, there is an earth before Genesis 1:2. And how long? And when was Satan the crowning cherub on the mountain of God? And all that mystery of Ezekiel and Isaiah when Satan was in Eden before he fell and said, I will ascend and be like God. And then there's war in the heavens and a third of the angels, as Jude says, that left their first estate are cast out. Wandering stars, Jude calls them. I still say all of that. But I wouldn't say any longer, you can be a Christian believing in evolution. Because it's a big lie. It's nothing but a deceitful lie. And our children are being brainwashed with garbage that the leading evolutionists of today have themselves abandoned. When you go past the geologic column, let me read this to you. Another book that you've had access to. And by the way, here's a little book out of print now, Growth of a Prehistoric Timescale. Based on organic evolution, it's the history of the development of the geologic column that you see in front of you. This book is also in the bookstore. No, maybe it isn't. I think I tried to get it, couldn't. But anyway, I'm going to read it to you. Am I boring you? Shattering Myths of Darwinism. You see, I used to think that these proponents were honest scientists. I even gave them credit, though scientism adopted the principle this world's all that there is and it's the best source of truth and the method called the scientific method is the only method to arrive at truth. I gave them credit for honesty. There are some honest scientists. Darwinism is a hunk of baloney. And it started out, as I taught in a festival years ago, with him robbing Wallace of the main idea. But let me read from Shattering the Myths of Darwinism. By the River Thames at Teddington, Bournemouth, west of London, straggles a cluster of nondescript factory buildings that seem an unlikely home for a national creature. Yet the buildings are of national importance to everyone in the United Kingdom because of a few pieces of metal kept there. The buildings are those of the National Physical Laboratory, and the pieces of metal are platinum standards kept at strictly regulated temperature and air-conditioned chambers to act as the indisputable authority For Britain's national weights and measures, the pound and the kilogram, the yard, the meter, the foot, the inch. Paradoxically, these standards are never used for everyday purposes. No one goes to Tennington to measure out a meter of cloth or a foot of parcel spring. Important, by the way, in that the so-called pyramid inch, based upon 1/500,000,000th of the distance from north to south through the center of the earth on its axis, which produced the royal or sacred cubit, which was the basis for building the Ark of the Covenant and the pyramid and the projected temple of the future millennial day in Ezekiel's prophecy. The British inch is a half hair's breadth off that pyramid inch. It's the British and now American measuring standards that have perpetuated that unit of measure. And the French Revolution and the metric system is based upon measuring from the North Pole to the equator across the surface, when we all know now the globe is not that precise in its roundness. This measurement has been perpetuated. It's not easy for members of the public to visit the National Physical Laboratory because it's a busy government research establishment and repository of many secrets. But it's certainly possible. Those fortunate enough to be given access to the NPL will see the famous platinum kilogram standard and the atomic clock that is the authority for Greenwich Mean Time. You can check your wristwatch and, in principle at least, check up on your 12-inch ruler and the weights of your kitchen scales. A few miles to the east of Teddington stands the very much more imposing structure of the British Museum of Natural History. Famous to generations of schoolchildren for its dinosaurs and dramatic reconstructions of the Earth's geologic history, this building, too, is the repository of a national standard. The one that's not on display in glass cases, that has proved very much more difficult to track down. The museum is one of the world's primary sources or authorities for the theory of evolution by natural selection, the theory that's taught in schools and universities the world over, a kind of headquarters of Darwinism. Like millions of people, I have visited the museum many times to stare and wonder at its contents. But I've been unable to see with my own eyes the decisive evidence for the general theory of evolution. I've been able to see many marvels and study mountains of evidence. The geological column that reconstructs the geological and biological history of the Earth, the dinosaur skeletons and myriad other fossils, marvels like the skeleton of Archaeopteryx, seemingly half bird, half reptile, the reconstructed evolution of the horse family. You following these icons? These images of the corruptible that are bowed in front of and that exalt the egos. I mean, Richard Leakey wasn't a trained paleontologist. He had to fight for the age of the skull he found in that K. Barensmeyer site, Tough, where the Leakeys have discovered so much. And I just read in the paper this week, they found one bone of a new giant member of the dinosaur family. 95, the phrase is bone age dating. Have you listened to me long enough to have some question marks go up about bone age dating? 95 million years old. Fact. It's in the newspaper. Marvels, like the skeleton of Archaeopteryx, seemingly half bird, half reptile, the reconstructed evolution of the horse family, but unlike its counterpart at Teddington, the museum is unable to exhibit the unchallengeable authority that conclusively demonstrates that evolution by natural selection has taken place and is established as a fact. I think we have spent enough time on the dating methods. No question that radioactive dating of volcanic material, which does not date time, it alleges a date of the refuse, what's left over. And it must be sediment that has volcanic origin as its primary rock. And we discovered that this process of uranium and thorium turning to lead, which has a different number of neutrons and thus is separable, able to be separated from ordinary lead that occurs naturally on the earth, as distinct from radiogenic daughters of uranium or thorium, and half-life that gives the age of the earth at 4.6 billion years. I think we spent enough time to show that there's a problem with this radioactive dating, because there's some dating going on with players that are capturing neutrons and loading the deck with the so-called radiogenic results of radioactive decay, and thus false dates. We've also looked at radiocarbon dating and discovered, again, there has to be a faith assumption. There's always been the same balance between carbon-14 and carbon-12 in the air that goes into the food chain. And when an organism dies, ordinary carbon-12 stays the same, but carbon-14 begins to deteriorate. The whole system's out the window. Unless the atmosphere has always had the same balance between carbon-14 produced by cosmic rays, among other possible explanations, and I'm beginning to question everything they explain, but that seems to be pretty solid, and carbon-12. Except, further research has made it clear, carbon-14 is accelerating in the atmosphere 25% to 38%. Thus, there was a time way back there when there's a lot less carbon-14. And if you start with less, then the results of decay is going to be less. And it looks like, I mean, if the ratio was 10% and 9%, you're going to get a different result than if the ratio started out 10% and 1%. And if you're assuming everything was 10% and 9%, then this guy that's got just 1% when he started out, he loses the first little cell. And he looks like he's lived a million years. The whole system makes assumptions not proven. These are faith premises by senseless men who embrace their own idea as a replacement for God. And these become icons. You must worship before them. To be educated, to get grants, to be appointed to university posts. It's unbelievable. As I read this little book on the history of the geologic table, where each period on this table that you have here in front of you, someone working with rocks spent 20, 30, 40 years on their theory of identifying a zone, what they call a zone index fossil, that identifies this particular strata. And eventually, the whole thing builds up. You've got an empire of knowledge. To bring Darwinism down is like toppling the Roman Empire. To bring Darwinism down is like toppling the medieval church. You must embrace it. We're in the tunnel As Houston Smith has said, scientism won the battle. And now, educational systems built by John Dewey on scientism, law, the other wall, embracing scientism. I could go from the Scopes trial to the Kansas school trial. And Darwinism, which is a religion, is okay to be taught in school. Creation, not. Darwinism's principles can be taught in school. Ten Commandments, not. The answer, don't take the Ten Commandments down. If you want to be neutral, add everything. Add Confucius, add Buddha, add Muhammad's saying, add it all. We can't have too much religion. We've had too much of non-religion. We've had too much of this. A stuff. Where it shouldn't be on faith. And not enough removal of the A stuff where it should be removed. We are captured by a generation, and the parrots in the media close the tunnel, and this is where we live and move and have our being. And your kids are indoctrinated into this as science and fact when it is not. It's scientism gone religious and pervert. It's a lie. This geologic table assumes things that are not true. I have a book here. I don't know if you can get it or not. If you have access to Amazon, you might try it. That's where I got it, off Amazon. Studies in Flood Geology. The entire book is a series of papers on creationism. Scientific and heavy stuff. I borrowed from that and put an insert on this second page that you have here of the geologic column. If I can find my glasses now, wherever I put them, who's watching? I have glasses up here somewhere, folks. Where? That's sunglasses, and the others are there too. What would I do without you? I just want to show you one thing. If you look, see the little table to the right?
Yes, sir.
The Cambrian is the period that evolutionists cannot explain, because all of a sudden an explosion of life is found in the rocks that are called Cambrian, dated 600 million years ago, roughly, 570, and then the rest is Precambrian. If you look at this little chart, I've tried to put in perspective the most of the geologic column deals with the last 600 million years by their calculation, and 4 billion years is the Precambrian. So we're dealing with relatively recent time on the geologic column and the current religion of acceptance of these ancient dates that we've been attacking. And since I was reviewing, I didn't even spend any time on the potassium-argon dating method. There, instead of decaying by the loss of neutrons, potassium captures an electron and becomes, the result of that capture is argon gas. And There's again a half-life predict. I think it's a 1.3 billion years for it to turn into argon gas. Argon gas, one of the most natural things in the earth. And it's captured in crystalline structures, like the evolutionist says, these are absolute dating methods, because it's like a bird in the cage. When the electron is captured in the decay of the potassium, it produces argon gas that's in a little crystalline cave. In a cage. Of course, the only problem is that's where natural argon gas occurs too. So it may be a bird in a cage, but like the players dating and capturing neutrons, there are other birds in the same cage. Natural birds and electron capture birds that are indistinguishable, not like natural lead and radiogenic lead. That's why they date an 1841 pile of lava, volcanic residue, with hundreds of thousands of years in potassium argon, when it occurred in 1871 or somewhere in the 1800s. And that's what made them date some rock painting as the oldest Aboriginal painting, except it was stolen from a modern art teacher's rock garden. These dating methods are unreliable, but let's take them at their word. 400 million years, billion years, 4 billion years, we know very little about Precambrian. No life of any significance fossilized there. All the fossil proof. Now, why are we concentrating on the 600 million? I'm going to say this without proving it today, prove it later, because the basis for dating these is they use fossils to date the rocks and rocks to date the fossils. Whichever is convenient and whichever one supports Darwinism, uniformitarianism, selective natural mutation upward. Darwinism violates everything. The first and second laws of thermodynamics have never been refuted. The second law of thermodynamics, first one is the conservation of energy, never been refuted. Second law, entropy. Disorganization occurs with time. Not organization. Leave something alone, it disintegrates. It gets confusing. It gets less organized. Intelligent design is necessary to reverse the law of thermodynamics. It is built into the nature of things. That's why you can't have a Big Bang and this distance of 15 billion years, this universe be so perfectly organized. Doesn't happen. That's like this recent bombing in that Tel Aviv party producing 4,000 runway models as they blew up. Tragic to even use this as an illustration, the evil that continues in that land, and the mindlessness of the Western world has forgotten the power of religion when it is directed the wrong way. We could not understand kamikaze pilots, and we don't understand those who believe they get an elevator to heaven by blowing up what they view to be infidels. But we see in that terrible incident of this week, entropy. An explosion produces confusion, not organization. An explosion does not produce a self-organizing event. So this last 600 million is where the attention is because they got to date it by fossils. I want to tell you something. Look at the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then the modern area is 10. This column gives you the impression that the earth is like an onion with these layers, one on top of the other. Not true. The basic law that started it with Lyell and those who grabbed, he was Darwin's geology mentor, father of geology. And Huxley seized upon both Lyell and Darwin. The assumption is the bottom layer is the oldest. The Appalachians, they've now discovered since this column in the early days, they now have discovered that the Appalachians have got a much older layer, according to these rock layers, on top of younger ones. Rich old rocks making it. That'll take you about the middle of the afternoon for that one. And they explain it by returning to what Lyell set out to destroy. The father of geology had two objectives. To remove the then prevalent attitude from the Bible that this earth had suffered major cataclysms, particularly the Noah flood, and those who, as I do, believe in the gap between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2, some cataclysm that was seen by Jeremiah, as I referred earlier, when Satan was cast down, who had been in Eden before his fall, and the earth covered with the waters and the Spirit hovering over it, and then he destroys the earth again with Noah's flood, which gives some sense, as I said a few weeks ago, to God saying he wouldn't do it again. Well, you know, if Noah's flood was the first time he destroyed the earth with water, the rainbow and its significance not quite that important. I mean, I'm not going to do that again. It sort of leans toward, I did it, I don't know how many times previous, but I destroyed it after Satan's fall, water's over, and I've hovered over the waters, and now I've destroyed the earth, he saved this family and the ark. The second time, cataclysms. Velikovsky was railroaded out of the scientific community for trying to return the world's view to repeated catastrophes. In this snide but brilliant Nobel Prize winning book that I have read from when we were talking about the macro universe, he has a little toss-off phrase. If he believed that, he believed in Genesis and Velikovsky. Ridiculed, one of the most brilliant and tightly researched writers ever to write. And the publishing house was blackballed and would not publish his books, because of the pressure from the academic community that we cannot return to cataclysms. And Doubleday, that produced no textbooks and thus did not depend upon professors adopting their textbooks, published his books. And because of the vitriolic and unfair treatment, he went further and produced Earth and Upheaval. And whether you buy his theory of the cause of cataclysms, his evidence of cataclysms, irrefutable to those who read. The Bible has always taken that position. And along comes Lyell, the father of geology. Two goals. Do away with any thought of cataclysms. Darwinism demanded uniform, slow process. I have told you, if you want to take a tape measure, and figure out the years. For this geologic column to be laid down like onion skins, two 1/1000th of a meter per year. Go ahead and add up the years here, because this is the typical geologic column, and figure out how many years it would take to lay it down to 1/1000th of a meter. That's a hair, a human hair. That means that these years, you know, it's about the same as they go along, the number of years. Sedimentation's been laying down these processes, either water, ocean, salt and evaporation, evaporites, sedimentation, waters cruising down mountains, erosion, laying down these sedimentary rocks that make this geologic column 2/1000ths of a meter per year. That's how much is laid down. You understand me? That wouldn't cover a fly. Now, how are you going to get a dinosaur laying around with no scavengers eating it long enough to fossilize and be buried in rock at a hair's breadth a year? 60 million buffalo, Velikovsky pointed this out, 60 million buffalo killed in the central northern plains of the United States for their hides. You don't find any buffalo fossils. 60 million of them. Bones scattered there. They did not fossilize. Deterioration, rotting, scavengers. There is no fossilization going on anywhere in the world today. And yet the argument is the present is the key to the past. There are plenty of things dying. Plenty of water falling. Plenty of sedimentation going on. No. No fossilization going on today. And the assumption is, here are these layers. I already told you, the Appalachians, they now, let me tell you, in spite of the textbooks, Gould and modern evolutionists have recognized that the fossil record will not support Darwinism, and they are turning to other arguments like DNA, but the most important change is they've become neocataclysmicists. Local and regional, they now say. Cataclysms had to happen. That's how the dinosaurs got wiped out. A comet or something. I mean, they've given every kind of argument. Some kind of dust that destroyed certain kind of vegetation that was necessary for the dinosaurs' bowel movements, and they died of constipation. Now, that's one theory. You don't believe me, but that's one theory. I just said, senseless minds. Pray to God we have no dinosaurs in this church. There are no skins of onions. Let me just say it to you. You can check it out yourself. Less than 1% of any country or place in the world, less than 1% of any location in the world has all 10 of these different, or all of these different zones of so-called rocks. Less than 1%. You haven't got an onion skin anywhere. And as I said, the Appalachians, they now, that's what pushed them to cataclysm. They're saying that continental drift and tectonic plates somehow move sideways enough to take an exposed bit of older rock and shove it sideways like a discus and over younger rocks that were there and caught by surprise as here come the old rocks and they're covered up. Cataclysm. Well, I believe in cataclysms. But here's the most important thing. Look at this little chart on the right. Over on the far right column, you see PC. That's not a personal computer. Now, you take all of these different ages, and you go down. You can see the Cretaceous, which is 15.5 million years ago. Jurassic, clear down to the Cambrian. And you're going to find in the right that Cambrian, 100% of the Cambrian rocks touch Cambrian rocks, because they are Cambrian rocks. You understand me?
Yes,
but I want you to look at the Ordovician. They're supposed to be next to the Cambrian. Only 23% of the Ordovician, in the places that these rocks are found sporadically around the globe, dated as they date them, only 23% are resting on Cambrian, supposed to be the base of the Ordovician. But what's even more funny is you got Cretaceous up there, just 15.5 million years ago. 9.6% of the Cretaceous rocks found in the world are sitting directly on Cambrian, with no Jurassic, Triassic, Permian, Carboniferous, Devonian, Silurian, Ordovician underneath them. You follow that? It's like Cretaceous suddenly crops out on top of the Cambrian. And 10%, roughly. Look at the Triassic. Look at the Triassic. 11.9% of the Triassic rocks in the world sitting directly on Cambrian. Now, the truth is, and maybe the best book found, if you can handle the heavy stuff, which is maps all of the locations of these different rocks around the world, the black being absent, we get the idea that the whole earth is covered with one of these kinds of rocks, like an onion skin. They've been laid down in layers. This is Paleozoic. The white on this map is where they've been found, and the black is their absent. By far the majority of the world. Here's the Cretaceous. The white is where they're found, and the black is none of them are found anywhere or haven't been found in that part of the globe. And we've already seen 10% of the Cretaceous are sitting right on the Cambrian. And this book clearly lays the case, I haven't time for it, Flood Geology, that all of these organisms and fossils and all of these so-called ages could have happened at the same time under a major hydraulic flood and volcanic combinations, catastrophe, cataclysm striking the earth. All of them could have occurred in short notice. 5 miles deep, the Colombian Plateau, with volcanic product that would empty all the known volcanoes in the world today. And Cataclysm knew, Neil, have concluded when it was an evolutionist who did the study of the great canyons carved in this, the greatest flood known to man, not the Noah flood, obviously a local one to this evolutionist, but the greatest flood unrecorded known to man, carved this out in a matter of days and weeks. The heavens opened. The earth exploded. You could rain all over this earth for 40 days and nights, it wouldn't flood it. A massive cataclysm. But that entertains the possibility of God. That entertains the possibility. This book, find it if you can handle it. This is by researchers, studies in flood geology. Got a big red stop sign on all the geologic column ages because it could have all happened in one day. Two more, my boy, and you'll I won't quit because I'm going to finish. Two more little illustrations. You ever make cement? Why do they call it cement? You've got to have a cementing agency. Sand mixed with water will not form cement. You have to have a cementing agency. I haven't time to read the chapter. I wish I could. But in this book by Richard Milton, Shattering the Myths of Darwinism, he quotes leading mineralogists, mining engineers, hydrologists, people with credentials galore, up to Nobel Prize winners. There's not enough in all the sandstones and silts and limestones that are formed, there's not enough organic matter that produces the necessary cementing agency to have caused the formation. And when you have a cementing agency, it works the same underwater as on the surface. It sets in a hurry. It forms just like that if you have a cementing agency. And if pressure and heat are applied, and you have the cementing, the results of pressure and heat rather than the chemical mixture, you can get it instantly. Coal. Maybe the most prolific kind of sedimentary rock known. Lignite, brownish, soft, doesn't burn very well. Bituminous, harder, burns better, more heat. Anthracite, the premium coal, black, like a jewel, burns with a lot of heat. For years we've been told the way coal is formed, geologic column, is a forest grows. The sea sort of moves in, creates a swamp. The trees die, and a peat type, like you form a compost pile, begins to form. And this forms ultimately a sort of peat base. That next step is the porous form of coal. And then, all of a sudden, the sea washes in and covers it with some sedimentation, creating pressure, and the sea stays there a while, millions of years, and presses this compost until it gets harder and becomes more as the cellulose content changes, and it turns into that which will burn. And anthracite coal is really produced. And then the sea moves out, the forests start to grow, and the sea comes back conveniently, and forests die, another level of peat, the sea moves in, sweeps some sand on it, puts some more pressure of a limestone rock or something on top of it, the sea stays there long enough to pack it down, and the sea moves, and forest grows, and the sea comes back, and the trees die, and it forms a swampy peat, and the sea moves back in, and lays another layer down, crushes that, and the sea moves out, and the trees. Now, I'm not giving you fiction. Two or three times stretches it. But the layers of coal are such, this had to happen 60 or more times. Somebody said, oh, bleep, I think. Involuntary response back here. Well, at least I'm not boring you when I get that reaction. 60 times to lay these layers of coal down. Millions of years. And the reason I say they're liars, the very people preaching this nonsense. I show you a picture? Hope you get your camera ready in a hurry. I'm running out of time. It always makes me angry that I run out of time. Shouldn't have sung today. Hold on. Here. Try to get this picture. This is right outside. Now I've lost my glasses again. That wastes time going to try to find where I put them this time. This is right out. Right outside the entrance to the Natural History Museum in London. Look at that. You see that? You see the man standing beside it? That big fossil there. You know what that is? It's a fully standing tree, 38 feet high, that was buried so quickly in the coal forming place that the tree was encased 38 feet high, full standing. And then having been encased, it died and rotted within, and a cast of coal in the cavity where the tree was standing forms. And that's what this is. It's the cast of coal. There ain't no way that happened except bang! Something hit and buried entire forests and then covered them instantly. Buried them while they were alive, well, and standing, and covered them instantly with so much pressure that they turned to coal. They walk right by that tree. Man, what a lively tree. The water came in, and its feet were wet. And the water went out, and somehow it didn't turn to peat, and the sand surrounded it, and the water came back and got up to a little bit, and it was growing all the time because it took so many years. It had to go 38 feet. It's too bad the coal did not keep the tree rings in there. One last thing and I'm done. I didn't have time to get all this stuff out here laid out this morning because I sang so much. Darwin said one thing pretty strongly in The Origin of Species, his book. He said that if it could be shown, this is Darwin talking, if it could be shown that any system or organ could not be produced by many small steps, continuously improving the system at each step, the reverse of the second law of thermodynamics, he said that if it could be shown that any system or organ could not be produced by many small steps, continuously improving the system at each step, then his system would absolutely fall apart. That means anything, any life substance that is performing something that cannot be produced in many small steps, like building it with a computer, then his system would absolutely fall apart. One example to tear his system apart. It was originally thought in Darwin's day that cells were very, very simple things, like little blobs of gel. But as science has progressed, it's shown that cells are extraordinarily complex, more complex than anybody thought. One example is the system that transports proteins within the cell from where they're made to where they're used. Now, without proteins, you ain't here. And don't go gorge on too much meat, but we're talking about something more sophisticated than just chewing them up. One example is the system that transports proteins within the cell from where they're made to where they're used. Enzymes are a class of proteins that help the cell digest other kinds of proteins. They are created in a compartment called the endoplasmic reticulum. I'm sure that you can use that in pillow talk. Endoplasmic reticulum. Enzymes that help the cell digest other kinds of proteins are created in a compartment called the endoplasmic reticulum. But they do all their work in another compartment, the lysosome. To get from the one compartment to the other, enzymes are stuffed into a vesicle, a kind of bus. The bus then travels to the destination compartment, eventually merges with it, spilling its contents into the compartment. Achieving this task requires several very specific proteins. A cell needs certain proteins, along with certain fats, to form the little capsule that contains the enzyme. It needs others to help the capsule grab the right protein. Finally, it needs proteins that help the bus attach itself to the destination compartment and merge with it. Now, if you think about irreducible complexity, virtually all of these proteins have to be there from the beginning, or you simply don't get any function. Makes it tough for Darwinists to argue that design is simply an illusion that's been produced by mutation and natural selection. Even a mousetrap, as Michael Bee, a Catholic biochemist, says, a mousetrap, the standard household mousetrap, has five parts, all of which must be present for the trap to work. If you take away any of those five parts, you don't have a functioning mousetrap. You can add the parts one by one, but until you get the full five parts, you have no function. It's an all or nothing kind of thing. That's just simple mousetrap. This whole process of these enzymes that help digest other kinds of proteins, being formed here, getting on a bus, selecting the right protein, going on this so-called analogous vesicle bus. Thank God they don't have LA drivers. If one could be found, Darwin himself said his whole system would collapse. Next Sunday, God willing, I will be taking us into information theory. And one of the finest books to be written in recent years by William A. Dembski, Intelligent Design. This is what they do not want to accept, absolutely will not accept, that there is any intelligent design. Evolution, Lyell's geology, was not only to do away with cataclysms, but to do away with the concept of God. They are demonstrating God's sense removed. And yet, they want us to accept in its place their icons, the products of their mind, as a substitute for God. I miss the whole point of these messages if it does not come home. Don't trifle with the knowledge of God you have, because God will get fed up at a point and withdraw from you the capacity to know Him and to ever be the object of His mercy again. That's a legitimate sour note that must be held as the contrast to the gospel, which is the good news. Recognize His presence, His handiwork, and marvel that one who created all of this and made us so wonderfully, and sing how great Thou art, take the gift of His love, trust Him, and become as He is, incorruptible and eternal, as He takes us home. Don't trifle with the knowledge of God that you have. And that's my message.